It's 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock, and we're going to go out in the streets for this session. The streets of LA. Good morning, everybody. I'm Bill Shirk from Bowling Green State University, and I am going to be a pure gentleman today. Right. I'm sorry, I'm not. Welcome to the 9 o'clock session of Radio and Records. We have three wonderful presentations today, and each one knows their time limits, but you know, some of them will have to be whipped into shape a little bit. but Carrie, Janelle, you know, I never know. Janelle, right? Like the girl I knew in high school, Janelle Schweitzer, all right. Jeanette, oh, that's a yeah. Bring the candle, Jeanette. Carrie said he may be running over a little, so by the time we're ready to close, and he's maybe hanging out over a little bit over the edge of the street, that you know, if you choose to leave, okay. If you just want to come in, you want to remain here and enjoy Carrie's final words, you're more than welcome to do so, and then you can leave the tip in the cup, you know, after you leave. Our first session is titled Collector's Guide to Victor Records. That's the name of the second edition of the book that Michael Sherman and Kurt Nock have written, and they're going to be talking about their publication and their struggles to create this wonderful second edition. Mike Herman's author of the book Paper Dog. He and Kurt both worked on the first and second edition of this Victor book. He is a member of the Golden State Phonograph Society and ARSC, and I always like to have a little extra tidbit if I can. He is also a professional numismatist. I just coined that term just now. And he's founder of Monarch Record Enterprises. Kurt Nock, we have no idea who he is, so I'm just making up this biography. He's collector, owner of Knox Vintage Records. He's written extensively on phonograph recordings. He's a member of ARSC and IASA. And again, we're wild folks here, so he's a degreed wildlife biologist, you know. So I hope we will unleash the two gentlemen here for their wonderful presentation. Thank you.
No. Yes, I just met this guy. thank you all very much for attending this morning, coming out to hear our little story here on the Collector's Guide. I'm going to start by giving you a very brief, about a 4 or 5 minute summary of sort of how the book came to be through the various editions, how it was put together. We're going to sort of fly through that. And then we're basically just going to do a show and tell. We picked about 15 or 20 records out of the book that we think were highlights of the book. We brought the records here. They'll be available to see after the presentation. And we even made a few recordings of a few so you can hear what's on them. So I think it'll hopefully be mildly entertaining at least at this hour in the morning. So let's get started. I first got inspired to do the book with a 1979 article that appeared in APM magazine written by Rick Wilkins on the Victor 7-inch labels. And being a numismatist and a type collector, I was always intrigued by the changes that occurred between labels and things like that. I have a natural curiosity for that stuff. And of course, I wanted to get one of each. And then I started thinking, well, they made 10-inch, they made 12-inch, they made all sorts of records, and what did those look like? So in 1986, I just took out three sheets of paper, 8.5 by 11 paper, folded them in half, took out a pencil, and started sketching out what a little booklet would look like if I did a book on records. And over the next year or so, it slowly grew. You can see that's the original paste-up board for one of the pages. That was done with a traditional camera with photographs of the records. That's coming out of one of those huge typesetting machines We cut it with an X-Acto knife, the whole thing, and just pasted it down with wax. I mean, it was very old-fashioned. This was 1986, 1987, sort of before PCs really did publishing. And in 1987, I went ahead and published The Paper Dog. It's a very modest book. Mike Beal is holding up a copy. It was published courtesy of Alan Koenigsberg. He allowed me to use the APM Press and one of a couple of his numbers for it. And helping me with that book largely were Tim Brooks, who I want to thank very much, and Bill Morin, who is unfortunately no longer with us. The book sold pretty well, and the following year I started working on the collector's guide. I basically did that pretty much on a computer, but it was pretty primitive. You see, it looks pretty much like a typewriter. And I just typed out the text for the collector's guide and just started building it slowly. Throughout 90 and 91, I continued to do research, and of course Bill Morin was helpful, Tim Brooks, and a number of other people, and that is one of the pages that Bill Morin returned in typical Bill fashion, covered with red ink. And that was probably one of the lighter corrected pages, but Bill went through the book meticulously with a fine-tooth comb and made sure that everything was just right. And there's a copy of that. That book sold out in about 3 years. We printed 500 hardcovers and 1,000 softcovers. I also worked with Kurt on that book. Kurt helped a great deal and supplied many of the records for the back of the book because Kurt's collection is so wide-ranging and he has such a wide variety of stuff. I had most of the early stuff. But our response to the book was good, and I received a number of requests for a new edition. But in the meantime, since we had just done Victor, I went ahead in the mid-90s and I worked with the late Julian Morton Moses, and we did a revision to his book, American Celebrity Recordings. He had left out a couple of artists, and there were a few corrections from his 1949 edition, which he was lamenting, and I was visiting him in New York, and I just said to him, you know, we could do a new edition. So he said, you know, we'll do that. So I worked with him. This was shortly before he died. He was pretty old when we did this. I think he was, in his mid-80s and not in the best of health. But we were able to get the book out, and he did see it, and he signed a few. So there's some autographed copies of that book. Kurt and I also decided to do a booklet on Columbia, and that's called Note the Notes, and I made a visit down to Houston. I didn't really own a lot of Columbia records, but Kurt did, and we made huge stacks, and we tried to sort them out, and we, sort of figured, well, this had to come after this one, and this came after this one, so we put that together. And that book also is still available, and we have those for sale at a very bargain price of $5, so if you would like a Columbia book, you can get that. That was done in about 98. Around the year 2000, 2001, I decided to start work on the revised edition. And I really worked on and off for about 10 years on it. I certainly didn't put in 10 solid years. I would work a few years, work a few months, take a few years off. And it just sort of crept along. But you can see what I was able to do now that we're using scanning and modern computers, I suppose. That is Monarch number 5000 on the left. That's the way the record really looks, and obviously someone had a sticker over the logo, trademark. And thanks to the miracle of Photoshop and cutting and pasting and all sorts of trickery, I was able to restore most of the labels that you see in the book to their new condition. And so virtually everything looks great. And I was assisted by Kurt for the second half of the book. As well as Tim and Dr. Beal, and a lot of moral support from my friend John Bolig, who absolutely never failed to mention my book in his, and I felt increasingly guilty as the book was no longer available, and I just felt like, my gosh, he's mentioning my book, every one of his books, I've got to give people something they can actually buy. So I think without John, this book may not have existed, so I want to thank him for that. But I received help from a wide variety of people. Many of them are in the room, Jim Cooprider, Mike Conchalian, Steve Smolian, just almost too numerous to mention. If I've forgotten anyone, I apologize. But so the book was published in November, and it is available. Here's a copy of it. This is the soft cover. We have both soft and hard still available, although the hard cover is running low. So if you want one of those, this may be probably one of your last opportunities to get it. So now that's how the book came about, and now we're going to go through some of the records that Kurt and I chose to that we think are cool. Kurt thinks all the records are cool, but I told him just the coolest of the cool.
We do have a handout, so if you haven't received one, they're being passed out.
Actually, when Mike came over to my place last year, we spent about 3 days together, and we'd be going through my stuff, and we'd be looking at things, and I told him, I said, you know, now that you've seen this record, I can get rid of it, because you're the only other person on the planet who would care. So they're not all necessarily worthy of a presentation like this, but anyway, we did pick out some things that we consider to be highlights, either historically, technologically, visually, or orally. And we decided the way to do this would be to kind of follow through the book in the way that the book was written. So the first part of the book is basically the chronology of the Victor record label from its predecessor Berliner up through the end of the 78 RPM era, which was around 1958 for Victor. So after that part, we have a lot of chapters in the back dealing with all kinds of the different series and genres and labels and types of records that Victor was producing. So starting from the beginning, probably the crown jewel of Mike's collection is the 1892 Berliner. This is the earliest known commercially issued American disc recording. And we're going to play just a little bit of that for you. It's seven. That's a clarinet solo, allegro. What does it say below that, Mike? By Verdi. As you know, Victor was driven out of business in the United States, and Eldridge Johnson basically picked up the reins in 1900. For a few months, it was kind of a rocky road for him trying to get everything together to be able to market his own phonographs and records, and there are a few transitional pressings that have turned up. This is also out of Mike's collection. This is from 1900. It's by Madame Romain, who actually was married to S.H. Dudley. I want you to particularly listen to the introduction, the announcement of this record. Let me turn the volume back up here. Okay.
Last night the nightingale woke me, sung by Madame Romain, Berliner Gramophone Record.
Last night the nightingale woke me. Last night.
What you'll notice, hopefully you noticed, was the fact that they announced that Berliner Gramophone Records, which is very curious. There are not many recordings from that time period that have that sort of an announcement. I think we're going to be seeing a paper one of these days from Mr. Giovannoni on that. The next thing that we have to show is the Victor 10-inch record. When Victor introduced the 10-inch format, they only use this particular label, Victor 10-inch record, for about a month, and so these are very, very rare. This is the only known copy of this particular number, Stars and Stripes Forever. Victor also issued a 14-inch format, which was known as the Deluxe Record or Special Deluxe Record. These were a little bit longer playing. And this particular one appears to be misnumbered. It actually appears as 2017 in the catalog, Victor's catalog. Mike has a copy of Victor's very first Red Seal recording that was recorded and issued in the United States by Ada Crossley, number 2186. Any of these 2000 series Victor Red Seals are very, very rare. And the last label that we're going to show to you that comes from that first part of the label chronology is something that is going to look terribly unimpressive. But this is a record that we didn't even know existed when we printed the first edition. This is a blue circular or ring label. And what makes it significant is that this is actually part of the 55,000 series blue label run. You may find a blue label Victor with this label with some other number, but having a 55,000 number is quite rare.
They're even very scarce on the scroll label as well.
Yeah.
Because the blue series was an acoustic series that was pretty much done for by about 1924, 25. It was about the end of it. So.
Now we're going to move to the some of the chapters in the back. One of the things that we discuss in the book is the various subscription series that Victor produced or contributed to. Most of you are familiar with the IRCC, for instance. But Victor actually produced a couple of records for their own record society in 1938 in the form of two autographed records that were limited to 1,000 copies, actually signed by the artist individually. This is Tommy Dorsey on VRS2, Meilenberg Joys, which was later issued as a commercial pressing, so there's nothing special about the recorded content. VRS1 was an autographed Lottie Lehman recording. In the 1920s, Columbia University recorded 24 sides for the American Speech Series, which was issued on Victor's Green Educational label. And these recordings feature persons of different regional accents all reciting the same story. It's a very, very interesting series, and I'm going to play selections from three of these. The first one that you're going to hear is from New York City. They actually made two New York City recordings. This is number one. Then you'll hear Macon, Georgia, followed by Stony, Texas.
Once there was a young rat who couldn't make up his mind. Whenever the other rats asked him if he would like to come out with them, he would answer, "I don't know." And when they said, "Would you like to stop at home?" he wouldn't say yes or no either. He would always shake, making a chase.
Once there was a young rat who couldn't make up his mind. Whenever the other rats asked him if he would like to come out with them, he would answer, "I don't know." And when they said, "Would you like to stop at home?" he wouldn't say yes or no either. He would always shake, making a choice.
If that's not Jimmy Carter, I don't know what is.
Once there was a young rat who couldn't make up his mind. Whenever the other rats asked him if he'd like to come out with them, he'd answer, "I don't know." And when they said, "Would you like to stop at home?" he wouldn't say yes or no either. He'd always shirk making a choice.
Isn't that cool? In 1932, Victor introduced his short-lived picture record series, and the record that we're showing here was not a part of that series. And in fact, we don't know the circumstances. You can take it out of the bag if you'd like. We don't know the circumstances behind the production of this record. It was probably made for some sort of an exhibition or something that Victor was doing. There are two or three copies known to exist. Curiously, it contains two sides by Sousa's band, conducted by Arthur Pryor and recorded on May 28, 1926. Another very interesting series that Victor did, or records that they did sporadically, are puzzle or multi-track records. We've got a section of those in the catalog, or in a book. This one that we're showing now is Victor's very first attempt at a puzzle record. This was recorded May 3rd, 1901 by S.H. Dudley and contains three 30-second tracks. According to Fagan and Morin, there were only 150 copies of this record pressed, so this may be the only extant example.
There is a dark man coming to the house with a bundle. Of sweethearts, you have two. You are going on a journey and will meet a blonde man who will ask your hand in marriage. Trust him not. He only seeks your fortune. The dark man is your true love, and you will marry him in the end and live happily ever after.
There's somebody bumped a chair or something at the end of the recording. Now I'm going to play another track for you.
Same side, same record.
There is a dark man coming to the house with a book. There is a dark man coming to
puzzle
the house
records
with a
bundle. Always give me trouble. Whenever you're trying to show them off, I'm going to try one more time.
You are going on a...
There we go. the other fortune is also about the dark man coming with a bundle, but it's a little bit different. Go figure. All right, let's move on. We got a lot of stuff to cover here.
Can't take hecklers.
RC, yeah, no hecklers, please. RCA Victor produced recording blanks both for home and professional use, and here is General Truman's announcement of Germany's unconditional surrender from May 7th, 1945, VE Day, and you'll hear a 60-cycle hum in the background.
NBC interrupts all its programs by the President of the United States. Good morning from the White House in Washington. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
This is a solemn but a glorious hour. I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day. General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe. For this victory, we join in offering our thanks to the Providence which has guided and sustained us through the dark days of adversity. Our rejoicing is sobered.
Well, there's no way to conclusively tell, but it is on a blank that's lacquer-coated, and it's a very good quality air check, so it was probably done by somebody who knew what they were doing anyway. It's obviously a 10-inch blank. Now, probably one of the most interesting chapters in our book is the one on pattern labels, and certainly it features the rarest of the rare. Most of the pattern labels that you'll see in the picture in the book, or at least some of them, exist only as label slugs. But a few of these were pressed up on shellac, and we've got, I think, three examples with us here today. Again, these are so rare, you'll see one here that's got a big edge bite out of it, but it's the only copy known to exist, so what are you going to do? Besides, you're not collecting these to listen to them anyway, which is why we're not playing any of them for you. The labels are so fantastic looking, you can understand why they probably never saw production, because they would have been too expensive to produce. Now, if one searches long enough, you'll eventually encounter a Victor test pressing in a box of records somewhere. But you're going to search for many lifetimes before you will find a Victor Durium test pressing. I don't know how this thing came to be. RCA probably loaned a stamper to the Durium Corporation to see what they could do with it. This is a July 12, 1928 recording of McKinney's Cotton Pickers, Shimmy Shawabble. This is an identical take to what Victor actually did issue. It's a great record. Yeah, we could just listen to that all day. There were many types of recordings that Victor produced for in-house use, and here is a killer example. This double-faced record was distributed to Victor dealers in 1905, approximately 3 years before two-sided records were introduced by Victor to the public, not counting the 7-inch Victor toy record, which is pictured on page 173. You know, did everybody get the handout? Okay, so if you've got the book, you can follow along, you know. You've got the page numbers right there. Now, one side of this record contains two tracks, one which is geared towards little boys and one towards little girls, and the flip side talks to Victor Salesman, and this is actually the phonograph itself speaking, and we're going to hear what he has to say to the little boys.
Name isn't Bill. Well, who said it was? Who am I? Why, I'm the Victor talking machine. I know what you came in here for. You want me to tell you that story about a pair of trousers and the man who wore his trousers to a party as a necktie. Well, I'd like to tell you that and a lot more, and sing that coon song for you, too. You know the one I mean.
You know the one I mean. That was Lynn Spencer, and this is a little bit from side two.
Now, Mr. Salesman, just give me a chance, if you please. I believe I can sell myself better than you can sell me.
Oh, I see by the twinkle in your eye that you don't believe it. Well, now we'll see. The other day, a live Indian tried to see me while he listened to one of my best records. As he turned away and shook his head, I heard him grunt, "Ugh, canned white man." You didn't know that you were in the canned goods business, did you, Mr. Salesman?
All right. Over the years, Victor produced countless demonstration and promotional recordings. The first was probably the ultra-rare 3-inch Buffalo Exposition record. One side features a brief recording, again by Len Spencer, and a glorious pre-dog label. Side two is covered by a label picturing the March King, which says, "Dear Mr. Johnson, your Victor and Monarch records are all right, John Philip Sousa." Contrast this with his comments in Appleton's magazine, The Menace of Mechanical Music, from September 1906, in which he says, "Canned music is as incongruous by a campfire as canned salmon by a trout stream." I have two different takes of this record. We're only going to have time to play one.
"Put me off at Buffalo. I want to see the exhibit of Victor and Monarch talking machines and records, manufactured exclusively by Eldridge R. Johnson, Camden, New Jersey."
Pretty cool stuff.
Can you believe he's got two and won't trade me one?
He hasn't offered me the right thing yet. All right, Victor also produced a very interesting recording in 1952 for some sort of promotional purpose. This is the only example of a Victor colored wax recording that I've seen. On one side is Spike Jonze's Country Cousins, and on the other side is Ralph Flanagan's orchestra, so go figure. Victor was one of several companies producing soundtrack discs for movie studios. The 1927 full-length motion picture, The Jazz Singer, featured synchronized songs plus a few spoken lines of dialogue.
"Blue sky, smiling at me, nothing but blue sky do I see. Oh, don't hold blue birds singing a song, nothing but little blue birds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right, noticing the days hurrying by when you're in love. Oh, don't they fly? Blue days, days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies from now on." You like that, Mama?
Only Jolson could put it over like that. Victor's contract recording's number is "A Stars in the Heavens," but given that this will probably be my only opportunity to work this recording into an Ars Collector, how could I resist the temptation to play a 1950 recording of Texas A&M's Aggie War Hymn? And yes, the Aggie ladies did win the national championship in women's basketball this year. Feel free to stand if you would care to. My dad went there, my brother went there, my uncles went there, my niece went there, my nephew starts next year, and my daughter just finished her freshman year in the Fighting Texas Aggie Corps of Cadets. You see why we had to play that one.
Why we?
All right, Mike, I let you have your blue label, okay? It all worked out. He's been trying to get me to trade him that record, too. Well, assembling this book, Mike and I made a number of fascinating discoveries. When playing this 14-inch film strip disc about the reopening of the Waldorf Astoria, because we had nothing else to do that night, we stumbled across a hitherto unknown recording of President Hoover.
"The name Waldorf Astoria has stood for comfort and hospitality for them. The erection of this great structure at this time has been a contribution to the maintenance of employment and an exhibition of courage and confidence to the whole nation. This occasion has raised them."
I skipped over the announcement of them talking about this Hoover address. But as Brian and I were transferring this in preparation for the lecture this morning, I don't know, it just didn't ring true to me. So I grabbed a copy of President Hoover's 1931 address on welfare and relief mobilization off the shelf, which is actually pictured on page 143, and I compared the two voices.
This broadcast tonight marks the beginning of the mobilization of the whole nation for a great undertaking to provide security for those of our citizens and their families who, through no fault of their own, face unemployment and privation during the coming winter. Its success depends upon the sympathetic.
So if you'll all take your books out and turn to page 242, get out your red pens, we did not find a new recording of President Hoover, unfortunately. And last thing we want to play is something that came out of the advertising record section. This was just too awful to pass up. This is Carmelita, the Talking Cow store display record. It was probably meant for a point of purchase display in a store.
I'm Carmelita. Come gather around and buy some Kraft caramels. Each bag holds a pound.
I tell you, once you've heard that a few times, it's time to move on to something else. Okay, well, Mike and I will... Excuse me? Yeah, right. That's a good way to deal with junk callers. Mike and I are going to be set outside here at a table. We'll be selling and autographing books. We'll have the records out for you to look at. Unfortunately, you can't touch them. And then tonight at the Collector's Roundtable at 8:45 here in the hotel, we may be able to play a couple of tracks that we didn't have time for this morning. Thank you very much for coming out. We'll also answer questions outside because we're out of time.